This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Not everybody complains about income taxes. Take, for example, those who do not currently get a paycheck. Seems like a shame to be missing out on a great American pastime. So what if we could get those looking for a better-paying job to the point where complaining about taxes was something they could do easily, too? This hour's guests have spent much of their careers helping others find satisfying employment. True, these days all three work primarily with college students, but whether you are a recent college grad, about to graduate, or just looking for a more satisfying career, chances are Denise Rudolph, Beverly Lorig, and Andre Luck have learned some things that could benefit you. Your chance to interview them is coming up right after the news. I'm Tom Graham. Great to be with you. This is Virginia Insight. So we have titled today's show, Looking for a Chance to Pay Income Tax. But maybe a simpler way to put it is to say that job hunting is our focus. And if you've got a question about that, I hope you will join us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or if you have suggestions about job hunting, you're welcome to call us too, 888-967-2825. Here with me in the Insight studio, Beverly Lorig, head of the Career Services Center at Washington and Lee University, plus Denise Rudolph, who works in the Employer Relations and Recruiting Services Department at James Madison University. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you.
Good to be here, Tom.
And with us by phone, the Career Services Manager at Piedmont Virginia Community College, Andre Luck. Mr.
Hello.
Luck, welcome. So now you might guess that our guests spend a lot of time with college students, and they do. But they also have experience in other aspects of employment assistance. So no matter your age, your education level, your station in life, whether you're looking for employment yourself or you know someone who is, your questions and comments are welcome. 888-967-2825. Ms. Lorig, let me go to you first if I could. What are the most common mistakes people make when they're trying to find a job?
Thanks, Tom. Boy, when people start looking for a job, they're usually doing that because they need a job. And when we all need a job, we're going to move quickly and try and find that job. So I think one of the things that will happen is that people start prematurely in a job search without having done preparation, thinking about what kinds of jobs they're looking for, what kinds of employers, what kind of culture. And so they often start a job search and fail miserably. I have worked with people who are actually experienced and have gone into the job search. And in talking with an individual, why did you tell them you were interested in the position? What was your goal? And the person said, well, I really have done all I can do at home now. My kids are in school. I just wanted to get out of the house. Well, that's great, but getting out of the house is not what I'm trying to hire if I'm an employer. So I think consistently people forget to prepare before they get into the job search. Students, and Denise, you probably see this too, students always say, I need to be applying for jobs. And when you say, well, what type of job? Well, I don't know. I just need a job. And so that is not going to be a successful job search if you can't say who you are and what skills you have and what you can offer an employer. So I think people are premature jumping into the job search, get whacked upside the head and fail miserably in those first few times. And then they come back and start to think about how did I mess up? What didn't go right with this particular job search?
Yeah, and I think to build on what Beverly just said is that in that haste, you know, some of those foundational aspects of the job search get lost. And that comes in the form of the resume and the cover letter and really thinking about, you know, how to build that out effectively and thoroughly and using some basic principles to make that happen so that you have a format on your resume that's easy to read, easy to understand, that you know on your resume what it is that you want to emphasize. And what you want to emphasize will pop out to the reader. They can look at your resume very quickly. They know what you can contribute to their organization. They know those attributes that you're going to bring to the table. And then in the cover letter, sort of a basic principle of that is answering the question for the employer, you know, why do you want to work for this employer? You know, what makes you interested in this position? What makes you qualified for this position? And really taking the time to prepare and making sure that those foundations of the process are going to work to your advantage.
Andre Luck?
I think it's also important that the job seeker realize that the employer is not a mind reader. Mm-hmm. So when asked, what are you applying for? When the job seeker says, I can do everything, I can do anything, I'll take anything, that turns the employer off because the employer has no idea how to put that person in the right job because they have no idea what that job seeker is talking about. It's really important for the job seeker to take the time to prepare, to know what he or she is looking for, so that they'll be able to better articulate to that employer just exactly what it is they want to do and why they're good at it or why they should be a good fit for that particular position.
So I'm hearing a lot about don't go too far, too fast. Give thought and preparation. And I want to ask you more about specifics of each of those. But we're already getting some calls, so let's go first to Harrisonburg. This is Jay. Jay, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our guests, Beverly Lorig, Denise Rudolph, and Andre Luck, please.
Okay, very quick question. I am 55 and going back to school. I'm studying to be a nursing assistant. It's an 8-week course, and I'm studying toward my certification. How do I look for work? And the ads, they're looking for a certified nursing assistant. How do I start my job search before I'm certified?
This is Beverly. I can start this conversation. You are working towards your certification, and you don't want to wait to the very last minute to start your job search. So I would suggest that you start thinking about preparing your materials now, talking to employers and other individuals who have the certification, learning from them what is going to be important to market yourself. So spend some of this time now preparing, knowing what the industry is looking for, knowing what the employers are going to be looking for, so that you, as you get closer to your completion of your certification, you could go ahead and start your job search. And it may be that they have immediate needs to fill. You won't get that one, but you've already indicated that you're interested, you're motivated, you're active in the job search. You're going to start to build what we refer to as your network of individuals in that industry. And more than likely, that's going to be the helpful piece that helps you find your job. So I see now your opportunity to do a lot of prep work before you actually can start work.
Yeah, and Jay, this is Denise. And I would say, too, to build on that, if you know of any individuals that are in that profession, then conducting some informational interviews with them, and that could help you as part of that preparation piece. Also, if there's a possibility to volunteer.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, in some of those locations. So that you get some field experience in that new profession, that could position you differently also. And think about your resume, too, and what format of your resume that you might want to use. Because you're changing careers, you might want to look into a functional resume, and that may work better for you than a chronological resume.
I would also say that you should start the job search right away by preparing yourself to be ready before you graduate. We have students who are in the nursing program, and I know you're in a nursing assistant program, but we have students in the nursing program who are so relieved once they have graduated that they decide to take the summer off just to take a break. but that's not when they should be taking a break. They still need to pass their licensure exam. They still need to do everything that they can to apply for those jobs. And they should apply before they graduate so that by the time they graduate, they're already in the pipeline. What happens when they wait until after they've gotten their license, or in your case, the certification? They are now competing with the students who are getting ready to graduate the year after they do. So it's always good to prepare yourself before you graduate, before you're ready, so that when that time is right, you already have all the tools and you're prepared to face that employer and to show them why you are the best candidate.
What, this is Beverly. One of the other things that I hear from people in the job search, and that students or experienced people, if you ask them, what would you do differently if you started this again, they consistently will say, I would have started this much earlier. So it's almost that you can't be too early, because you're going to learn a lot in the process of getting ready for the job search and networking, as Denise was saying, and as Andre was saying, meet those employers before you can start work is the best advice.
So, Jay, it sounds like our advisors are saying just by asking the question you did, you're on the right track. Did you have a follow-up, or if we addressed your question?
No, you did. You answered it. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Employment advisors Beverly Lorig from Washington and Lee, Denise Rudolph from James Madison University, and Andre Luck from Piedmont Virginia Community College are our guests. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Our call-in phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can reach us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And this came in on Facebook from Lauren, who says, this is for a friend who is job hunting, but she and I are much the same in that we are not on Twitter, we barely understand Facebook, yet we keep hearing that if you want to succeed in finding a good job, you have to have an active presence in social media. Is that true, Andre?
I would say that today, social media is the mode that many employers are using when they're looking for good people. Now, I would recommend that if you use social media, that you would use LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the preferred and the most popular form of social media for professionals. And in LinkedIn, not only can you put your profile, which would be in the form of a resume, but you can also have people recommend you for different types of qualities or attributes you may have. You also can search for employment opportunities. It's a site that many recruiters use when they're looking for good people as well. As far as Facebook, I think that if you use that site, you should keep your content to a minimum. People really don't need to know the personal details of your life, your birth date, if you're in a relationship, anything that's not going to be professional. I would recommend that you clean up any unnecessary information that could cause employers to dismiss you if they are researching you through social media, especially if they find some unsavory things that you have done or photos that you have displayed.
And I'll follow up with that in that I think the social media is being used in multiple ways. It may not be where you will find a job opening, but people may be watching and reading what you post on your Twitter accounts or if you're on LinkedIn. But particularly within Twitter, what I'm hearing is that employers who use those mediums frequently are looking to see what kinds of things do you write. What does that say about your tone? Are you positive? Are you negative? Are you a real pain?
We have to pause for the break. We'll ask you to expand on that when we get back, Beverly. And also, Andre, I've heard you say before that one thing people could do is think more like an employer as they get ready to apply for a job. So I'm going to ask you to follow up on that, too. We'll be back in about a minute.
They say that I won't last too long. home, they all say. But they're dead wrong, I know they are, 'cause I can play this here guitar, and I won't quit till I'm a star on Broadway.
Famous song displaying both confidence and persistence as we look at job hunting strategies. Denise Rudolph from James Madison University, those two characteristics, persistence, confidence, how important are they?
I think that they're key throughout the whole process, and that's from the start to the finish. And obviously, you know, once you get there, you still want to convey those attributes. But particularly when it comes to the interview process, I think that conveying that confidence as you walk into the lobby, making sure that the person there at the front desk, that person is greeted in a pleasant, respectful manner, that you, when you walk through those doors, you know that that's when the process starts. If you make it through the doors, then you definitely want to make sure that you're in that right mindset. And then once you meet that hiring manager, you're conveying that confidence through your handshake, through your eye contact, through your posture, through your body language, and then ultimately through your responses to the questions that you're being asked. And then you follow through and communicate with that hiring manager after the interview, and you thank them for having had that opportunity. And then you continue to persist after that interview, and that you know that you still have to be putting yourself out there, looking for other opportunities, keeping your eyes and your ears open, networking, making contacts. And then as Andre was just, you know, referring to, if you're using LinkedIn or other social media, that you are using that as part of the process. But then, as Beverly mentioned, that might not be the key to making things happen for you, but it comes back to the basics, and that is networking, it's face-to-face communication, it's having that personal contact.
Andre Luck, some of us are just natural wallflowers. What is it that you want us to do to display confidence that we don't usually display, or is it even reasonable to try and be somebody that we're not when we're applying for a job?
Well, when you're applying for a job, you really need to know what the employer wants to know from you. So basically, there are three things that employers want to know. The first one is, what are you applying for? The employer's already told you, because the advertisement says what position is open. The second thing the employer wants to know is, do you have what we're looking for? Well, what are they looking for? That same ad tells you, what are the qualifications? What type of background do you need to have? What are the requirements or the preferences? What's a must? What's a plus? Those are things that the employer is looking for, and they want you to tell them that you have those attributes. And then the last thing that the employer wants to know is WIFM.
And you're going to explain that. I know you are.
Yes, I am.
Could you say that again, please?
WIFM. W-I-I-F-M. WIFM. And WIFM is a marketing principle, and it stands for what's in it for me. Employers want to know, out of the sea of applicants, why should I be interested in you? There is so much competition out there. What do you have that we need? So WIFM and accomplishments are the same thing. many times a job seeker will indicate duties and responsibilities. Well, those duties and responsibilities...
You mean what they've done in the past, like on a resume?
Well, what they've done, or perhaps what their job description says they were supposed to do, but perhaps they never got a chance to really do everything. They might not even do them well. But accomplishments will show how that employee or job seeker added value to a previous employer. It will show how they turned a situation around, that they had some type of expertise. There was something that they did that was very meaningful that helped that company succeed.
Employment advisors Andre Luck, Denise Rudolph, Beverly Lorig, our guests. Our call-in phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK. Next, we're going to Strasbourg. Richard, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, hi. I'm an older job seeker in my early 60s, and I retired somewhat early a couple of years ago after a layoff, an unexpected layoff. And I did something I always wanted to do, which was build my own house. And now that I've done that, I've wanted to get back into the job market, but at a level not where I was previously, not at a senior level. I was last working for a large defense contractor at a senior level, at a six figures level. And before that, in the construction business as a vice president of construction, and high pay and high stress, and I'd like to get back to a level where I was building projects and sort of happiest at a modest income level.
Richard, is part of the problem that you're being told that you're overqualified for the jobs you're applying for?
Well, first and foremost, I'm not being told anything. I apply for construction management, project management positions, and I think my first complaint or concern is I don't hear anything. You don't hear back anything. And I have the concern that, number one, I'm too old for that sort of thing. I also have the concern that, who's ever reviewing my resume thinks that I want their job or I want to run the company and not the project, which really isn't what I'm after.
One of the things I'm hearing is you're describing your situation here is that you're not hearing back and you're assuming the worst. They're assuming that they don't want you, and that is very typical for a job seeker. If I don't hear back, they must not want me.
But this is Beverly Lorig.
This is Beverly Lorig. But let me go back to what we had commented on earlier, how important it is to follow up, follow through when you've made applications, because you can bet that that employer you're applying to is getting hundreds of resumes, and one of the easiest tools they can use to filter that applicant pool is wait to see who contacts them. And so it's important that you, when you're making an application, not simply do your online application, but do everything you can to call, follow up, express your interest. If you have friends that work in that industry or in that employer, to get introductions. So you want to actively pursue this opportunity. And it is often the case that it feels like you're applying to lots of jobs and getting nothing back. And that's happening to everybody, whether it's a college student getting ready to graduate or a much more experienced person. So I think follow up with those employers where you're making these applications. And Denise, you might have some other thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I was wondering, Beverly and Andre, what you think about the option for him to answer the question for the prospective employers and connecting the dots for that prospective employer as far as when they see your resume, they see someone who was at a senior executive level, and then you're applying for opportunities that are at an entry level or mid level now. And sometimes it's as the prospective employer, you wonder, well, why would a candidate who's had this level of experience be interested in now an entry level or a mid level position? And I think sometimes it helps to, whether that's in the cover letter, to try to answer that question for the prospective employer.
Absolutely.
In a professional way.
Absolutely.
Without conveying too much personal information. But I often, when I'm in a hiring position and I'm hiring for positions at JMU, you know, I see this and I have that question as a hiring manager. When I see candidates that have been at a certain level, and I wonder what would interest them about this particular opportunity. So I thought that could be something to think about.
And also, there is such a thing as the hidden job market.
Mm-hmm.
And over 75, maybe 80% of jobs that people obtain are through the hidden job market, which is through networking. And I'll have to say that every job I've ever gotten, except for my first one in high school, was through networking. It's because I knew someone, or someone knew me, or I knew someone who knew someone, and that person introduced me to other people. Having a face and that person in front of you who can tell a story can make a much better connection than seeing a resume when they know nothing else about you than what's on the resume. Networking is crucial. It's vitally important if you really want to overcome some of those barriers. Now, networking can work for you or against you, but I'd say in your case, when you meet with people and you actually have an opportunity to sit down or just maybe at a social gathering, talk about your experience and how now, you know, I really want something that's low key, low stress. I have a lot of experience and I really believe I can help you, but I'm not after your job. I just want something that's comfortable so I don't have to have the stress that I used to have.
I think this is Beverly, and I'll add for the caller that if you haven't reconnected with your former employers, that might be a new network to revitalize, to reach out to the places where you worked for such a long time. There may be individuals who can offer suggestions within the industry. But again, I think that story that Andre is saying is everyone understands there comes a point in your life where you don't want to be the person in charge. And so I think you have a very consistent story. You also have a pattern of strong performance. So getting that resume done so that it shows your strengths. But I would definitely say the piece that I didn't hear was the initiating the follow-up beyond submitting a resume. I think you will find that will make a big difference in the process.
Richard, it sounds like you've elicited lots of great advice that lots of people are going to be able to use. Thank you so very much for your call.
Okay, thank you.
This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Andre Luck is Career Services Manager at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Beverly Lorig is Director of Career Services at Washington and Lee University. Denise Rudolph is Assistant Director of Employer Relations and Recruiting Services at James Madison University. You can tell they all work a lot with college students, but they all have other experience in personnel and in job-seeking advice. So whether you're concerned about helping a college student get a job, whether you're a college student who's about to graduate and you're concerned about getting a job, or whether you've been in the career that you're in for the past 30 or 40 years and you're thinking about switching to another one, if you've got a question, we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Also, if you're an employer and you'd like us to know more about what's on your mind when you're looking to hire people, we'd love to hear from you too. 888-967-2825. Andre, let's get back to this thing that you talk about so often about thinking like an employer. And it seems to me that you also talk to people about marketing themselves as if they were a car.
Okay.
A very nice car.
Yes, exactly. Well, resume writing is marketing. It's really not selling, it's marketing. And so, for example, let's say that you see an ad for a car, and you make such an emotional connection with that car that you really see yourself driving that car, and you like the features of that car. It has features that my car doesn't have. So, for example, it has GPS. It has the controls in the steering wheel. It has padded seats or the lumbar support.
Heated
seats. The heated seats. Well, the person is not interested in the car because it has a steering wheel or because it has seats, rather. You expect that the car would have those features. They like it because it has something that makes their lives easier.
And so you want that to show up on the resume itself.
Absolutely. And so when you think about that car, the ad was not written for the automobile distributors. It wasn't written for the dealers. It was written for a potential customer who wants that type of car and not all the other cars that would be the competition.
And so in this case, the potential customer is the employer.
Exactly.
And if I'm the employer, I am so enticed by this resume telling me that this applicant has the kinds of things I'm looking for. But you also say that that's just the first step. That's the marketing, not the sale.
Exactly.
Tell us about the sale.
Yes, because the ad is supposed to attract attention. So now let's say you go to the dealership because you want to see the car, maybe test drive it, make sure it really has the features you're really interested in. Well, an employee of that dealership walks out to meet you. That person is not a marketing rep. That person is a sales rep. That person is to sell that car to you. So as we translate that back to the resume is a marketing tool. When you go to the interview, you're there to sell. You're there to close the deal. Well, what are you marketing? What are you selling? You're marketing and selling a product. You, the job seeker, are that product. And you are marketing to a potential customer who is that employer.
And I'll follow up with that as well in thinking about yourself as a product. You want to think in terms of what you've done in the past that will predict what you're going to do for this particular employer. So a change that has happened with resumes, we talked about this a little earlier, is that resumes now aren't job descriptions. They are outcomes based.
Exactly.
So I want to know, what did you do to have an impact, to reduce our costs, to motivate others? All of the resume will need to be focused on outcomes. How did you have an impact? And it could also be about what you learned in that particular situation.
We didn't get back yet to your concerns about social media, Beverly.
Oh, so I'm looking forward to it.
I will make sure that we do that when we get back from the break, which will be just a bit more than 1 minute. Denise Rudolph has done work helping people get jobs in the defense industry in Northern Virginia, as well as worked as a career counselor at George Mason University and the University of Virginia. Today, she focuses her skills helping students at James Madison University. Andre Luck also once worked at UVA and before that in human resources for Omni Hotels. Today, his job hunting expertise is aimed primarily at aiding students at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Now, before moving to Virginia, Beverly Lorig was putting her skills to use in different areas of the state of Georgia. But for the past 23 years now, she has headed up the Career Development Center at Washington and Lee University. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. I can't even begin to do the math on how many years of career help our guests have combined together. But if you'd like some job seeking help, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. So was
Tom, thank you for not doing the math.
So was it social media that you wanted most to get next to?
I did want to come back to social media at one point. I think it is so much in everybody's face now. Everyone's talking about Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, who knows what else, Pinterest. I can't even say it right.
This is Beverly Lurie.
This is Beverly. And I think the danger is that job seekers can hear about those new, hot, exciting tools and lose focus on what they're wanting to do, and that is to connect with people, have a chance to promote themselves in positions in which they will excel. The resume is simply a chance to get introduced to be the person who someone wants to hire. No one's going to hire anyone simply because they put something on a social media tool. It comes down to people hiring people. And so not only do you need to be prepared and clean up your, if you do have Facebook accounts, but you also need to look the part. You need to be able to show that you're knowledgeable and prepared and professional. And that first opportunity to do that is when you meet that employer. And I've seen cases where there's been a real disconnect in terms of what someone thinks they look like as opposed to the industry that they're trying to get into.
Help me picture this. Give me an example.
Oh, one I'll never forget. Young man interested in getting in the banking industry. Exceptionally bright, exceptionally creative, really funny too. I mean, the kind of person you want on your team. And I met him as he came out of an interview, and I looked at him and said, oh, no, that probably said something stronger. But looking at him, there he was with his blue blazer on, a shirt that clearly had not been ironed since his mother sent him to school with it. And I looked down, and there were those brown scuffed shoes, but that wasn't enough. He had on white athletic socks. So here's this.
That's really not banking's image?
I don't know what bank you go to, but that's usually not the attire. So my conversation with him was, what are you doing? And he said to me, I don't know what I'm doing. This is my first time doing this. So know what you're getting into, because no matter how bright, how capable that young man was, he did not know what he was getting into and what the expectations were. So know how you need to look, know how you need to present yourself, and please, 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 guys, buff up those shoes, please.
Well, Denise Rudolph from James Madison University, it seems to me that I've heard you say before, you may not be prepared unless you've practiced. That if you haven't had much experience applying for jobs or going to job interviews, or it's been a long time since you've done that, you really just can't show up and expect to get it right the first time?
Definitely. And I think before I go to that, I'd like to build on what Beverly just mentioned, in that, you know, a lot of what we've talked about today is, you know, honing in and focusing on the foundations and the basics and being really strong with that before you look at social media as add-ons. Even if you go back to what Beverly was mentioning about attire, and that's really, it doesn't have to be flashy. You don't want it to be flashy. You want it to be solid, basic, foundational suits. And really investing in that, investing in your attire, investing in the basics, the resume, the cover letter, you know, how to market yourself. And part of all of that, as you mentioned, Tom, is being prepared. And how do you do that? It can be as simple as you can, if you know the questions, some of your basic interview questions that could be asked of you about your strengths, your areas for growth, tell me about yourself.
And that's the one that so many people fall on their face. And
tell me about yourself.
Tell me about yourself.
That's your intro question.
Right. And there's a, duh. What do you want to know?
But, you know, practicing that. And I know, you know, for some it could feel awkward, but practicing.
Well, tell me about the practice. Do I practice in front of a mirror?
Yeah,
do
you
I
can
get
practice
a bunch
in front of a mirror.
And
you can start out with that. Then you can, you know, if you have a roommate or a friend, I mean, and then you practice back and forth. So you do some role plays and so that you can verbalize that, you can hear yourself. That person can on the receiving end can provide you with feedback concerning your verbal cues, your nonverbal cues, your body language, your posture. Habits that we all have that we don't even realize that could be distracting. And
you could also, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Andre.
You could also videotape.
Yeah,
yourself.
You can video. Yeah, exactly. That's
use your iPad.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Critique yourself. That's a great way to see all the things that Denise just mentioned.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And I mean, we have for the students at JMU. I mean, we have web-based tools that they can use to practice interviewing, and so there are those, but if you don't have those at hand, then you know any of these are definitely good options.
Andre Leck, I understand that you tell people, you counsel to practice their elevator speech. What does that mean?
Yes, an elevator speech is really your commercial. And when Beverly said, tell me about yourself, is really the first type of question that most employers are going to ask in an interview. What they want to know is, who are you in terms of your education, your experience, and perhaps why you are interviewing for that job as it relates to that job you're applying for, that you're interviewing for, or that you're interested in, the company and or the industry. They're not interested in knowing, you know, I'm from Alabama, and I'm one of six children, and I like Virginia.
It's got to be a little bit more focused than that, doesn't it, Andre?
Yes, yes. But there are people who will say all types of things like that.
And go on and on and on. And
they
don't stop with the tell me about yourself.
Yeah. I think another thing I would add to what you're saying there, Andre, is that the other thing that often comes out with some of this practice that we're talking about is the tone that you use when talking about your former employer.
Yes,
and
no
with
trashing
our
or bashing.
Yes, no trashing, no bashing. And believe me, the tone in how you present your experience, mm-hmm. whether it was the best or the worst job, it needs to be a positive, strong statement about what you took away from that experience. So rule of thumb is do not get in there and talk about how bad your job was or how bad your supervisor was, because I'm going to look at you and say, and I probably don't want you on my team either. So think about it.
Because what is he or she going to say about me and our team and our organization?
Absolutely.
And don't ramble. Don't go on and on and on. The employers have a certain amount of time to ask you questions in that interview. Don't waste their time by just talking and talking and talking. Answer the question as briefly as possible with as much information as you can, and then stop talking.
Right. Another key component, this is Beverly speaking again, that we talked about very early on that I want to mention again because it is so crucial, that when an individual goes for an interview, comes in to the lobby, is greeted by a receptionist or someone else, that is really the first interview. And because people are often nervous or frustrated or just anxious in that moment, there often can be a less than pleasant exchange between you're walking in and checking in for your interview and the person at the desk. And we will hear numerous times where the person at the front desk was the one who said, this is not a person we want to have around. So be aware of your engagement with everyone, because you are being evaluated from the moment you walk in.
I think the opposite end of that spectrum, too, is walking in too casual, you know, walking in with your Starbucks, carrying your Starbucks and your muffin, having your headphones in, or, you know, chewing your gum or whatever. I mean, those are things that you don't want to do, because, I mean, you obviously want to come across professional, and that's going to convey a much more casual tone than you want to.
Employment advisors Beverly Lorig, Denise Rudolph, and Andre Luck, you all, in addition to the work that you do today, all in your past have been involved in hiring people and making decisions about hiring. So I know that the next time I'm going for a job, I have to lose the white socks and the scuffed brown shoes and maybe even iron my clothes first. And there are lots of other things that we now know about the mistakes that you've seen people make. I'm wondering if you can tell us about someone you saw in a job application process who just blew you away, whether it was the in-person interview or the resume or somebody that you heard about from someone else, that they were so impressed that they had to tell you about it.
Well, I just had an interview before I came here today, and there was a young lady who interviewed for an internship program, and she said all the things that I wanted her to say. She talked about her attention to detail. She talked about her accomplishments. She talked about how she had made a difference where she had been working in the past. She told me that she was a quick study, and that she didn't have to be micromanaged, that she takes ownership of her projects. She just told me everything that I wanted to know, and she gave me enough information so that I felt comfortable knowing she really did know what she was talking about, and she knew what I did.
And I'll take the other side of that too, Andre, that we at one point interviewed a candidate who was just outstanding on paper, absolutely, absolutely outstanding, number one candidate, everyone agreed. And we decided, well, rather than bringing everyone to campus, we would do the Skype interview. And it is amazing how much someone's personality can come across through Skype. So what was our number one candidate became, there's no way we are going to work with this person. So it's important that...
What came across that gave you that...
Attitude. Yeah. In the Skype interview, the person had a lot of great experience, but clearly thought very highly of himself, very highly, even to being a little bit... a negative tone in referring to someone else. So it was clearly a case of someone who probably thought they walked on water, but really didn't.
Denise Rudolph, who blew you away once that you thought, we really have to hire this person, and how did they do that?
Well, I think it's the opposite, obviously, of what Beverly just said, in that, you know, this is a person that comes across very positive. You know, maybe he or she didn't have the best experience at a previous employer. However, they present it in a way that they know they learn from that experience. They do have positive comments to make about that experience. And also, I think that whether it's through the formal questions or just through the casual conversations that take place as part of an interview, they are asking questions of you that conveys that they've really done some research. They've really gone above and beyond what's expected in terms of knowing about your organization, how you go about your business, how you do what it is that you do, what are the programs that you're involved in, the services you're involved in, how we work with students that would relate to us. So I think that sets candidates apart as well. So they really come across as, you know, being comfortable, positive. You feel like you can relate to that person. You can visualize that person on your team. And I think that that's what you really want to get across, is that you want to see that person really be a part of your team.
It's very expensive to hire folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's worse to fire them.
Thinking like an employer is a good thing to be thinking about. Our guests have been Denise Rudolph, Assistant Director of Employer Relations and Recruiting Services at James Madison University, Beverly Lorig, Director of the Career Development Center at Washington and Lee University, as well as Andre Luck, Career Services Manager at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find more information about each of our guests. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.